And now, from the Fortress of Solitude, deep beneath the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, sci-fi4me.com presents The Rogues Gallery.
Welcome, everyone, to this special San Diego Comic-Con edition, part two of The Rogues Gallery here on Sci-Fi4Me Radio. Jason Hutt here in the studio with Allie, the intern engineering, with precision and delicacy, because our technology just is spitting at us today. Joining me by remote from all parts unknown, from our Fort Worth, Texas affiliate, Mr. Jeff Hackworth.
Hello, hello.
And here in Kansas City, Mr. Christopher Jensen.
Greetings.
And Timothy Harvey, our resident ne'er-do-well, who is out and about himself tonight.
Okay. Ne'er-do-well?
Well, sure.
My life is nowhere near exciting enough to be a ne'er-do-well.
Oh, is that your story?
Okay. Just
my,
heard the siren.
Story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
Just heard the sirens.
Well, in Kendall.
Yeah, Okay.
Yeah. Well, and Kendallson is off doing his own thing tonight. He had a work detail.
In Earth 2, right?
Well, you know, that was kind of interesting to see all of that stuff that hit this week, talking about that cousin to Earth, that planetary body that we've known about but suspected could be close to a match for our conditions here. It'll be interesting to see what the data actually shows, if there's anything there. But tonight, or this morning, or this afternoon, depending on when you're listening to the show, we are talking about the DC Comics television news, some of it coming out of San Diego and some of it subsequent to that, because there have been a lot of casting announcements that have come out after San Diego. And I guess you want to go alphabetically, or you want to go in reverse order from what shows we like, in which case we'd start with Gotham.
yeah, let's get Gotham out of the way.
Okay, let's get Gotham out of the way. They are fully investing in the crazy, according to the discussion that came out of the panel. Aaron Richards, playing Barbara Keen, and Bruno Heller, the producer, saying, "Oh yeah, no, we're not done with Barbara," and I just kind of sunk a little bit in my chair when I heard that. I was like, I don't know how they're gonna get.
Yeah, she needed to be excised some time ago. I never really fell in love with that character. I'm intrigued to see the direction they're going, though, even with the challenges they've had in this first season so far, to see what they're going to do with the development of these vigilante-type heroes. Hopefully they won't go too far. And Bruce's exploration of this, you know, new potential Batcave, or the origins of it, down beneath Wayne Manor. And, I don't know, skeptical but optimistic about this new kind of young Joker prototype.
Well, and Cameron Monaghan crashed the Q&A at the panel in San Diego, and he was in fine form there for that. And it's interesting that the question he asked when he crashed the panel was, how high is your pain threshold? Or something to that effect, which has me wondering if that's going to play into his arc for the second season, or if that's just something he was just, you know, popping off for the purposes of crashing the Q&A. I don't know what I have a theory, and it's not based on anything other than what they did in New 52 Earth 2, but I don't see that they're going to go that way in Gotham. But, you know, given what they've done so far, I guess anything's up in the air. But what do you guys think about Barbara Keen becoming Joker 1.0 and Jerome becomes Joker 2.0 later?
You know, that would actually be something that might actually get me to watch the show again. Because I really have given up on it. I mean, there's just, it's gotten so just bad that I just don't have any interest in watching it.
Yeah.
I just watch it for the
something point. Like that. Something like that might actually bring me back. Because unfortunately, although all the penguin stuff is actually, halfway decent, it's not enough to overpower the rest of it, which is just, it's just bad. It's just bad writing. It's bad writing.
So I'm not a huge, like, super deep DC fan person, but can anybody clear up for me and understand, like, am I confusing characters with Barbara Keen, being connected to Jim Gordon? Was she going to be Barbara Gordon? Now, is that like is that Batgirl, or is that like what Commissioner Gordon's wife becomes?
Barbara Keen is supposed to be Barbara Gordon, Batgirl's mom.
Okay.
Yeah, the Batgirl Barbara Gordon has had a couple of different origins, and I think the current version of Batgirl, Barbara, is that she is, and I don't know if New 52 kept this, she's the adopted niece of Jim and Barbara Gordon. So Barbara was named after Aunt Barbara, and whatever happened to, I guess, Commissioner Gordon's brother and his wife, and they ended up with young Barbara in his care, and they ended up adopting her, and she becomes their daughter. I don't know if they've kept that in New 52. I think they have. But the question now, given the direction that Gotham has gone with Barbara Keene being, how do you describe it? Fatal Attraction-ish, maybe? I mean, she's just gone full tilt crazy.
She's way past Fatal Attraction. That at least was personal.
They just move off together.
Say it again. And
I just think that she should have moved away with the ogre, that villain who was in all the BDSM stuff.
Well, see, and you still have the question of what happened with Montoya. I mean, Alan and Montoya just disappeared after how many episodes, and they never came back. Now, I was looking on IMDb, and the listing there for the first episode not only includes one of the new additions to the cast, which we'll get to in a minute, but it also does list Montoya. I didn't see Alan there, but I did see Montoya. So maybe they're bringing her back to deal with Crazy Barbara, maybe?
As a love interest again?
I hope not, but, given how that arc has been written, I wouldn't be surprised if they did that.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim, sorry.
I was going to say, the problem is that we have reached a point with a character where we are well past a redemption arc. There's no, and now she's all better.
Yeah.
Point with this character, and I just don't see how you can. I mean, basically, at this point, the best hope we have is that she dies tragically, and Jim Gordon adopts some little red-haired waif.
You're still thinking the redemption, the tragic hero type end for her.
I think that's the only way that the character actually can end in anything resembling thematically satisfying ending. I don't think it's probably going to happen that way.
Well,
but,
given what they did with Fish Mooney, though, I don't know that they even really know what they're going to do with this character, because Fish Mooney's story ended when she got on the boat. And we all know that she showed up and had another kind of weird arc thing for the last four or five episodes of the show, and she was completely unnecessary to the whole thing. It really, and everybody was sitting there going, oh, well, Jada Smith's got a contract for the whole season, so she's got to show up. But nobody knew what to do with her, and, you know, her story's done, so let her go.
So what about this for Barbara? What if she gets doused with chemicals and then she becomes the Joker, you know, but Montoya is trying to stop her from falling in, and she gets in the chemicals and she loses her face and becomes the Question. That's assuming good writing, but
No. We're past even the remote possibility that there's going to be good writing on this show. The only thing that would redeem Gotham at this point is if they just dive in and fully embrace
the CSI Gotham.
Not even that. This is Batman 66 Begins. And they have to really, really just go whole hog and, you know, do the Dutch angles and the wild colors and turn this thing into something that you would not be surprised to see Adam West in. That's the only way that they're going to redeem this, because you can't. You've gone past the point where you could redeem the show just by focusing on the gangster stuff. If they had stayed with the crime thriller, it would have been okay.
If they would have given us Gotham Central.
Gotham Central would have been great.
I think that, you know, you definitely can't forget Crazy of, like, some of the stuff they've already done. But I think that with their, you know, current, what I consider, like, the most significant casting news in it, and considering that actor's procedural background, I mean, he is a heavyweight in that area. And to me, he will bring potential grounded, great storytelling. I mean, he's the actor himself just needs it. Like, I mean, he brings it just on gravitas alone, but I think that's the reason why he's been cast.
You're talking about Michael Chiklis.
Yes.
Yes. And I think I'm wondering if there's a couple of reasons why we're getting Chiklis. One, to set up some sort of an arc, because the way they're talking about it, he's going to be playing a character that is not, doesn't have source in the comic books, very much like Fish Mooney. Captain Nathaniel Barnes, he's going to be a mentor, gung-ho, law and order type mentor for Gordon, but also is going to be a potential, he's going to have that arc that ends up putting him in the place where they're enemies at some point. Season 2, of course, has been promoted as being the rise of the villains. Dun, dun, dun. But, you know, Chiklis is a surprise casting on one hand, because surely he's got better things to do. But you know, then, you know, he's been in Fantastic Four. He's been in No Ordinary Family. So he's got superhero chops. He's not unknown in that world. And then, of course, with the Shield and the Commish, he's done the crime procedural stuff. So this is, you know, this is going to be a good fit for him, just like Chris is saying. Yeah, his background, especially in procedurals, is going to serve him well. Mm-hmm. But
that's what I'm excited for, really.
I just don't see it. I don't see a reason for this show right now. I don't. It seems like we are. For watching The Penguin, for watching Sean Pertwee, unfortunately for me, it's just not enough. I just have no interest anymore.
You know, I just had a thought. I'm wondering if they're bringing Vicky Cartagena back as Montoya, and Captain Essen is still listed in the credits. So here's what I'm wondering is if Captain Barnes, if Chiklis's character, is coming in as the new head of the Major Crimes Unit, and we're going to get an arc that's Barnes and Montoya doing something, whatever it is, and at some point that puts them at odds with Gordon.
Maybe they're going to try to get Arkham running.
I don't know, maybe. Yeah,
I'd really like to see some Arkham stories. I'm hoping that the Joker Jr. will kind of lead us in that direction along with Barbara.
I don't know. I just don't see any redemption for Barbara, either on a story level or with the writers. I think the writers have... It's almost like there's two groups writing these shows. And this one
Barbara
group over here does...
Barbara has to be there.
So
Catwoman and Poison Ivy can have a place to live.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, and that's kind of a... Yeah, I don't even get me started on Catwoman, Poison Ivy. That's just another, a whole other thing. It's just, I don't know. It's like they took the Batman story and characters, and they threw them up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And then just randomly picked things to start putting them together because and I am a huge fan of things like Elseworlds and What If. So you want to give me alternate versions of characters, you knock yourself out. Have at it. But there comes a point where it really is just a whole lot of silly. And the show is too dark to go Batman 66. And it is...
That's why I'm saying
silly.
they need to embrace the silly. And...
Well, but it's too silly to be taken seriously in anything right now. It's in another world that is just not serving anybody well.
Mm-hmm.
They need to embrace the silly so the Riddler and the Penguin can come to power and just rule Gotham.
Well, and we already know, too, that Season 2, we're also going to get Clayface, Mr. Freeze, and Mad Hatter.
Of course we are.
I mean, the Rogues Gallery is going to be complete by the time Bruce is in high school. I mean, he hasn't even started his training yet, and half the Rogues Gallery is going to be in place already.
Clayface
give him a wedgie or something?
His voice hasn't even changed yet.
I know.
He's
And he's already got another love interest. I mean, besides Kat, we've got Natalie Allen Lind coming on board as Silver St. Cloud. And granted, she's young debutante, you know, the niece of Theo and Tabitha. Well, Theo Tabitha's his sister. Theo and Tabitha, brother and sister, Galvin. Theo's running for mayor. Wealthy billionaire philanthropist who has a dark secret. And, of
secretly he's Green Arrow.
Well, because his sister, this is a new version of Tigress, who's another villain in the DC Comics universe. So we're going to get that one on top of Clayface and Mad Hatter and Mr. Freeze and the Joker and the Riddler. It's crazy.
Can we have Scarface? I just want to see how they would do Scarface in this Gotham show with the doll with the machine gun.
Oh, that would be
what?
Really interesting.
Considering what we've gotten so far, I think there's a good chance we could get Scarface because he fit
Let's
in
have
quite
Scarface.
Well.
You know, it's funny. I was watching Justice League Unlimited the other night, catching up on a bunch of stuff. The episode called Double Date, and it features Huntress and the Question. Going after the guy who killed Helena Bertinelli's family. And this is the Helena Bertinelli that's the daughter of a gangster. And it was written by Gail Simone. And you can tell they're having fun with it because Helena's dad, Frank Bertinelli is Al Pacino in Scarface. That's how they drew it.
Oh, of course.
And I looked at it and went, oh, that's Pacino. Oh, I see what you did there. That was a good one. It was funny, just mentioning Scarface there. I thought about that. And I went, yeah, okay. I can throw that in. But yeah, that was, but see, it is. I think if they embraced the silly and did Batman 66 Begins, they would be in a whole better place. But it does feel like there's two writing teams. There's basically, you guys go write the crime thriller, talented writers, and you guys go do something with Barbara, hacks. And let's see what happens. We'll just meet in the middle. Just give us 44 pages. Go.
Yeah.
It really feels like that's what they're doing.
Well, it's like I said, you guys will have to let me know. like I said, I just can't. I cannot see me having any interest whatsoever.
I'll commit to season two for you, Tim.
Okay, well, somebody has to, and I appreciate that. Because I cannot, just don't see it happening.
Yeah. Well, speaking of season two, Flash is going to get a second season, and we are certainly much more optimistic about that. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Flash, we're going to talk about Arrow, and maybe get into a little bit of Legends of Tomorrow, depending on what our time looks like. That's going to happen right on the other side of this break. We do want to encourage you to go to AtomicCotton.com. They are makers of our T-shirts. They've got some pretty cool stuff over there that if you're into that kind of thing, wearable art and such. So we're going to take a break, let you hear from them and some other stuff about our shows that we have here on Sci-Fi From Your Radio. Don't forget, if you would like to support us in our endeavors, we do have a campaign going on over at Patreon. It's patreon.com/sci-fi-for-me. And if you've got a comment on Gotham or any other topic that we discuss here, you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, and we will be back right after this.
This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
Whoa, where'd you get that shirt?
Bought it at the convention last week. It's an Atomic Cotton design.
Atomic Cotton?
Yep, they got T-shirt designs from sci-fi, horror, cult films. All the shirts were really unique and fun. I had to get one.
I gotta wait for another convention, though.
Nope, AtomicCotton.com. I ordered a shirt. Shipping was super fast.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon. Or find them on the web at AtomicCotton.com. Atomic Cotton. Shirts and art for fans by fans.
Hi, this is Jason Hunt, and if you're one of the dedicated listeners for this show, first of all, thank you. Second, you are sharing with others, are you not? And you should be aware by now, we have many shows as part of Sci-Fi For Me Radio. Our Marvel discussion on Level 117, the DC chat on the Rogues Gallery, Sci-Fi for Chicks talking about various topics, which we also do in mixed company on the Echo Chamber, and H2O, which is our one-on-one discussion between Mr. Harvey and myself, now syndicated over at Amazing Stories Magazine. Sci-Fi for Me Radio is more than one show, and we'd like to invite you to join us for all of it, or at least try it out and see what you think. And also check out Sci-Fi For Me TV. That's our YouTube channel where we have interviews, convention panel video, all part of giving you the most bang for your buck. Oh yeah, wait, no, it's free. So check it out, Sci-Fi For Me Radio and Sci-Fi For Me TV, all part of SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
If you unsubscribe to our podcasts, our legion is doomed. Now back to the Rogues Gallery on Sci-Fi For Me Radio.
Back in the Rogues Gallery, Jason Hunt here in the studio with Allie the intern engineering back over there. I have switched from lemonade to coffee because I need the caffeine to keep up on the conversation because we're going to talk about Flash. And Jay Garrick and Zoom. And joining me here on the show from Fort Worth, Mr. Jeff Hackworth, cosplayer extraordinaire.
Salutations, everybody.
And Christopher Jensen is here as well from parts over across the river and through the woods.
Evening.
And my co-conspirator over on the H2O podcast, which is simulcast on Amazing Stories Magazine, Mr. Timothy Harvey.
Hello.
Now, see, that's better than calling you a ne'er-do-well. Yes, maybe?
Yes, this is true.
Okay, see? It's the coffee.
There you go. See, you're better now.
Yes. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com, or you can call our hotline. Let me use mine.
It's a red phone.
Randy Radio Voice.
It's a red plastic phone in a glass case.
And that number is 573-42 Sci-Fi, and it actually does work. And you can leave a message, and we will listen to them and respond accordingly. And sometimes that means we'll actually give you a response. Sometimes we won't.
Depends on if we like your questions or not.
Exactly. Okay. So, The Flash. The only thing,
DC show I like.
You know, Arrow's...
Oh, I like Arrow, too. We've just been coming off of Gotham. It's very, very easy to sit there and go, yeah, no.
Yeah, well, season 3 of Arrow was very, very uneven. And I'm hoping this new lighter tone for season 4 is actually going to improve on that. But the teaser that we got a little... season wrap-up video for both Flash and Arrow. And for the Flash, the last bits and pieces that we get is a new speedster with a different color lightning. It's an ice blue-looking color. And the teaser text says, Zoom is coming. Bum, bum, bum. That's your cue to discuss and analyze, guys. I do the setup and you knock them out of the park. Come on.
Is that how this works?
That's what I'm told.
Oh, okay.
It reminded me of a car commercial. Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Oh, I guarantee you that they're at some point considered the possibility of using that as a joke.
At the very least, it's going to be a line for Cisco.
Yeah, and the only reason it might not work is if there might be some sort of expensive legal requirement that they
No, that'll be the episode. That'll be the episode where they have the Mazda product placement.
There we go. Okay, that could work. The fun part here is that they are continuing to really just put they're putting real challenges in front of Barry here, which I think is a really good choice they've made, which is to actually have villains who are worth having be arch enemy type characters. I mean, so there's they've done really well with villains on this show.
Of his caliber or above.
Yeah. And so they don't have the silly ones. They've got the villains that really, really do push him.
They don't have the top.
They also got Pied Piper and Golden Glider. I think those guys qualify for silly.
Well, Golden Glider is a sidekick for Captain Cold. I mean, she's not a primary villain.
Yeah.
She's there for comic relief and to flirt with Cisco. That's all she's
there. Also if they do it properly, she's also going to become a tragic death. And a reason to be there to be real enmity. Because right now look at the villains we actually have. We have, and this is what I like about them. We have Captain Cold, who is there. He doesn't. It's not like he doesn't want to kill Barry. He doesn't want to hurt the Flash. It's a game. He's playing. He's having a good time.
Yeah.
You know. And there is that lovely mix of love and hate. From Professor Zoom, or from the Reverse Flash, sorry. And, you know, that there's a, you know, a level of depth to that relationship that is sorely lacking over on Gotham. And actually has something, you know, it's, you know, how many people were actually tuning in to watch Tom Cavanaugh?
A lot.
Yeah. Because he was a very, very good villain. And the fact that he's back for, you know,
in some alternate form.
Yes. Is something that we can all be very happy about. Yeah. Well, because the other thing is that in the grand tradition of the comic book, nobody stays dead for long. And when you've got time traveling speedsters, you can play with a lot of different things. So, I'm very pleased. Been very, very pleased with what they've been doing, with the fact that they, you know, there's there's an emotional level to the Flash that I think has worked really, really well the first season, and I would be hard pressed if they're going to screw it up in the second.
And they're pretty much saying, yes, this is a comic book show. We know what we're doing.
And that's refreshing.
All the elements of our comic book.
Yeah, and you know, and we've seen photographs of the Flash Museum. We've seen hints, and Danielle Panabaker has sat there and said, "I want to be Killer Frost so bad." You know, so we've got that still coming. We have Cisco turning into Vibe. All of that still being teased without any kind of indication when it's going to happen. We just know that the cast wants it to happen.
Let me just throw in that they've actually found a way to make Vibe interesting.
Yes, yeah. Who'd ever thought that would happen?
Because for those of you who are old enough to remember, and for the folks at home, turn to the old person next to you, Vibe is an actual comic book character from 90s?
Early to mid-90s.
And he was a member of the Justice League, or a version of the Justice League. And he was...
vibrating things.
He was a flash dancer. He was a break dancer.
He was part of an interesting trend that DC tried to do back then, which was expand the ethnic makeup of a lot of their superheroes, and they mishandled it a lot. And Vibe was one of those characters. It's like, wow, could you throw a few more cliches at us, please? When Vibe died in the comics, no one cried.
Yeah.
There was no wailing across the land. It was.
But when he died on the TV show, repeatedly in season one.
Well, and the
people were sad.
The thing is, though, we haven't gotten Vibe, and I think they've been very, very smart with this, because going into it, people would sit there, because I remember even saying it myself, Cisco Ramon, Vibe. They're putting Vibe on the show? What are they doing putting Vibe on the show? Why in the world would they do that? But they were smart and got us as an audience to care about Cisco Ramon, the uber geek nerd in all of us identifies with him, because, you know, he's sitting there going, how cool is this? You know?
And he gives all the villains their names.
Yeah. And he became this likable Joe, and now they can make Vibe work a whole lot better than if he just right after the accident suddenly he's got powers and he's Vibe.
Well, I think they're also taking a look at the idea of the name not just being, you know, Sonic based powers, but also looking at it as being someone who's able to see potential, you know, alternate histories and an alternate reality.
Isn't that something that Geoff Johns gave him when they brought him back? Isn't that?
You know what? I honestly don't know. But considering how important vibration, you know, the vibrating frequencies and it is to the Flash. So we've got your running through things. Mm-hmm. You've got your crossing dimensional barriers. These are, you know, all of this stuff comes down to the Flash vibrating at a certain rate. And so instead of taking, since we are, we're dealing with a Barry who is growing in his powers, he's not super, you know, he's not everything right off the bat. To actually have another character who can accentuate potentially, I mean, I don't know if this is where they're going to go, but I mean, to potentially be an accentuating influence when it comes to, like, okay, we have to cross over into the Earth 2 universe, Jay Garrick. And you know, I mean, there's different ways they can play with this aside from being, you know, the breakdancing music, you know, vibration, blah, blah, blah thing. It's a smart way of doing things for a show that, and Jason and I have talked about this a little bit, is that, you know, we were, when they initially said that there was going to be this, like, you know, team for the Flash, part of that makes sense because, you know, back when they were writing the original comic books, you could have, like, a solo hero off doing on their own. Now a team makes more sense, and they had a good model with Arrow. But they're actually finding uses for the people on this team. They're not just there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really, really pleased with it.
Well, and speaking of Jay Garrick, now we do know that season two is going to pick up about 5 months after the end of season one, which... I don't know if that's a good idea. I mean, they've earned a lot of trust from me, so I'll wait and see what it looks like. But I mean, you've got the end of the season. Barry is running into a black hole. You don't just cut away from that and then, oh, 5 months later. And what?
Well, maybe it's been 5 months and the Flash hasn't been there. Maybe the Flash is stuck in an alternate reality.
Yeah, and but nothing's going to survive 5 months sitting under a black hole. I mean, that's going to be something that they deal with in flashbacks and Flash sideways and whatever they're going to do with the transdimensional stuff. Or it's going to be a giant elephant in the room, and everybody's going to go, what happened to the black hole? Because it's got to be addressed in some way, or you're going to lose your audience.
There's a way to do that, and it's basically you give it that, you know, he runs up there, the black hole disappears, and then it's 5 months later and nobody's seen it. So yeah, there's ways to make that work. I mean, I'm much more confident in them finding a way to make that kind of time jump work, than, you know, the inevitable scene where we have to have, you know, Bruce Wayne grow up a little bit over on Gotham because the kid is going to get older, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, they've earned a little bit of wiggle room for that sort of thing.
I have faith in the writing team. I mean, I think that the writing team has proven so far that they can handle some of these bigger challenges. You know, I will admit that I know this multi-dimension thing will provide a lot of opportunities for new stories and sort of one-offs or one-shots, if you will, of things. But I think I'm most concerned in that vein about Killer Frost because... from what I've read about the character and the setup, two things. One is that I think that all these shows need their mundanes. You know, and it feels almost like in a way they're kind of shifting towards this idea of like making the entire, you know, Team Flash superheroes. And I know there's still a few left that they haven't touched, but it just feels like if you get too crazy, eventually you lose some of the great dynamics between powered and non-powered. But for Killer Frost, it feels like that if they don't treat it right, I don't want to see that, even in a multi-dimension version, as like a necessarily as a one-shot thing. it feels like it could be a much greater arc, you know, something that really defines the character and how she transforms, you know. But if it is a multiple reality, I suppose you could just do a couple episodes, but I hope they at least give it that.
Well, I think when you balance out who's got powers and who doesn't, the fact that Tom Cavanaugh is coming back would seem to indicate that we're probably, and I'm not, you know, it's not a 100% for sure thing, but we're probably going to get the real Harrison Wells back in some way, shape, or form. And then, of course, you've got Joe, you've got Iris. You're going to have the new new character, Patty Spivot, who's going to be Joe's new partner, played by Chantel Van Satten. And if back to what Tim had said about how they treat Killer Frost, if she is a superpowered being born of tragedy, we still don't have any word that Robbie Amell is going to be part of the Firestorm combination over on Legends of Tomorrow.
It seems like he's not going to be.
That's what everybody is wondering. So, you know, they've gotten married, they're happy, he dies again, and whatever causes that to happen creates her superpowered persona, maybe. I don't know. You think that would be a way that they could be, because we know we're getting Firestorm on Legends of Tomorrow. We know we're getting Professor Stein. We've got this kid playing this black kid playing a character named what, Jay Jackson?
Yeah.
That people are starting to suspect maybe a new actor playing Jason Rush, maybe.
Well, we already had Jason Rush in the first Flash.
Yeah, but he was a one-off, and they've recast before. I mean, they recast Linda Park when she was turning into a bigger part of the show. They recast her. They recast Sarah Lance when she came back as the Black Canary. Well, as the Canary. So, you know, it's not unusual for them to say, "Oh, hey, well, we're going to take this character and now we're going to use him more. Now we need somebody who can act," or something.
Right.
Or somebody who can commit to a season or 10 episodes or, you know, 6 months or whatever. And it is, you know, possible. Maybe they talked to the guy who played Jason Rush before and he's got other commitments. Or maybe he didn't want to do it. Maybe he sat there and goes, you know, I didn't have any fun on The Flash.
That seems unlikely, but it's fun.
Yeah, very.
It's not a fun show.
I'm surprised the Robbie Amell was not like a lock, you know, for even Legends. I mean, he's in this genre of shows, and he's well liked by the fans. Obviously, you know, connected so closely to Steven, and it just felt like a great fit to have him join the group. And he could have been a character that can go back and forth. He could do other projects by being Firestorm. So I'm a little disappointed to see that he's not confirmed yet. And you know, but he could be a vehicle, like you talked about, for. I mean, they've indicated it already in the story in the backstory of Killer Frost that that's the reason why she, or one reason of one of her origins, that she becomes this character. So,
well, you know. What is it that he just joined the X-Files?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So it's, I'm wondering if
X-Files is only six episodes.
Yeah, it's only six episodes. But here's what I'm wondering is if Legends of Tomorrow gives us Firestorm. But Robbie Amell is not part of that, maybe because they're juggling all of these schedules for him doing movies and doing the X-Files and whatnot, and we get a Jason Rush-Martin Stein combination in season one, or it's an alternate timeline Firestorm that's Stein and Jason. And at some point when the schedules all line up and the planets are in the right position, then Robbie comes back to play his half. And, you know, and we get Ronnie Raymond back. Maybe Legends of Tomorrow has an alternate universe Firestorm.
There is that structure that, you know, within the story of Firestorm in the comics that he does actually separate, you know, from the actual Firestorm matrix, and the professor can do it on it, can both can convert on their own. Yep. And then when Rush joins, they're able to actually fuse into, like, you know, a super version of it. So, I mean, it gives them a lot of flexibility, I think.
I think so. And then, of course, Captain Cold's dad. Michael Ironside. Darkseid.
Well, since he isn't tall enough to play Darkseid in the movies. Although they should still do that.
They made John Rhys-Davies 3 foot tall. They can do anything.
I know. If the cinematic universe, if they're going to go Darkseid, then they could do far, far worse than casting possibly one of the best voices and best villains in genre pictures for a very long time. The 80s, for those of us who are old enough to remember them, was the era of the B-grade science fiction film, and you could find Michael Ironside on every other one of those.
Yeah, he was in The Final Battle. He was in the second miniseries. He was in Total Recall. Scanner. Was Starship. It Scanners? He was in Scanners, wasn't he?
In Scanners, yeah.
Starship Troopers. What else was he at? Yeah, he was a voice on the animated Justice League.
He was literally in probably a dozen completely forgettable science fiction films that, you know, are of no consequence of any kind, except for the fact that you got to watch Michael Ironside just destroy the scenery.
Yeah.
He's just a fun actor. And he's got a great voice and a great, you know, just great presence. So that's actually really kind of fun to know he's going to be there. He's going to be.
And it's going to be an interesting dynamic to see him with Wentworth Miller, because watching the panel, the Flash panel, Wentworth Miller kind of comes across a little bit as himself, very much like Leonard Snart in his demeanor and in the way he talks and his rhythm and cadence and such. And I'm thinking, he's not having to stretch very much for this performance. It doesn't seem like. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see him and Michael Ironside chew the scenery together, because Miller really does a good job of just going over the top with his gentleman rogue villain act.
He's having a good time.
Mm.
And that's, you know, I think that you can elevate a lot of mediocre material if the people involved are having a good time. There's a lot of great B movies like that are just, you know, the movie itself is nothing of consequence, but you can tell the cast is having fun, so you're enjoying the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that Gotham is missing. But The Flash and Arrow, both those shows look like the cast is having a good time.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons they're as popular as they are, is that the audience can tell that the casts enjoy themselves. And so when you end up caring about the characters and the actors and investing in their performances because they're enjoyable.
Speaking of Arrow, let's cover that.
Wait, I had a question.
Yes.
Do you think because Captain Boomerang is in the Suicide Squad movie, we can't get him on the Flash TV show? Or do you think we are going to get Captain Boomerang on the Flash? Because we already had him on Arrow.
Yeah.
For the Arrow Flash crossover.
You know, that's a good question. The only thing that the producers have been specific about has been Deadshot and Harley. And Tim and I have talked about this before, that in the Suicide Squad movie, the only ones who have to be alive at the end of the film are Deadshot and Harley. Everybody else is expendable.
Right.
And I think that given that Arrow had to quote unquote kill Deadshot and take him out of play, and given that they had plans for Harley that they couldn't follow through on, but we haven't heard anything specific to any of the other characters as part of the Suicide Squad. I think it may be that. Maybe Boomerang doesn't survive past the first film, and then he can be back on TV. Maybe.
I think there's also the chance that if the Flash really does invest in the alternate reality, the Earth 2, the multiverse concept, which I think, you know, they really think they're going to go there. It's too attractive a possibility for them. And fits, you know, because really the Flash of Two Worlds is where it all started. And if they do that, then they've set the groundwork for having multiple versions of characters. And we already know that at least some of the actors involved with the cinematic universe would like very much to have more than one version of Barry Allen appear on screen together. That is a real possibility that if they were smart, they would play with. So, I mean, it's potentially there.
Right, except for the fact that the people who are running Warner Brothers Pictures aren't that smart.
Well, but I think eventually there's going to come a point, I think, that the people running the TV shows are going to be, you know, we've already got ourselves three successful seasons of Arrow, uneven though it can be. We've had a very, very successful season of The Flash. Somebody is going to sit there and say, hey, this is working.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there'll end up being some crossover, at least of creative teams, if nothing else. But I don't know. I think it's much easier for me to see the idea of multiple versions of some of these characters actually getting a chance to play on the big screen and on the TV show than I would have thought before Flash came along.
Right. Well, and speaking of multiple versions of things, we've got a new version of Mr. Terrific joining the Arrow cast. Echo Kellum is going to play this particular version. His name is Curtis Holt. Not Terry Sloan, the first Mr. Terrific. Not Michael Holt, the second Mr. Terrific. This is apparently a new one. So they're gonna get to play with a clean slate here, sort of. I'm expecting he's gonna be an amalgam between the two. Genius, inventor, tinkerer. He'll probably come up with the T-spheres. He's in the Felicity's division department at Palmer Technologies. So he's gonna be a tech weenie of some sort. So that was announced that Mr. Terrific was coming on. We got the casting announcement after San Diego about a week and a half later. And then we've also got Alexander Calvert coming on to play Lonnie Machen, also known as Anarchy. Those of you who are familiar with the comic books know that this is yet another Batman villain coming on board the Arrowverse. And the fact also that Mr. Terrific is going to be gay probably means that we're not going to get his girlfriend, Power Girl. I'm disappointed, but it also reduces the potential for the crossover into Supergirl. I'm disappointed.
True. I think I don't know that they necessarily ever handled the Power Girl Mr. Terrific romance terribly well, but that was a New 52 thing. And I don't think they handled a lot of the romances in the New 52 very well.
No.
So that doesn't bother me so much that we're not necessarily going to get that.
It means we're not going to get Power Girl.
Well, it means we're not going to get Power Girl on that show.
We may get Superwoman on Supergirl. We can talk about that at some point, but yeah.
I think you could still potentially get Power Girl over on Supergirl. Because you could then have your alternate another alternate universe story. If they really want to start playing in the multiverse, you can have a whole, you know, every show gets their alternate versions of characters.
That's true.
And quite frankly, I think that would be awesome.
We didn't talk about how Atom Smasher is going to join the TV shows either.
Oh, the I didn't Flash. See that. Who's playing Atom Smasher?
Atom Smasher is... Let me check.
Which show is he joining? Chris, you say that he's coming on to Flash?
He's going on Flash.
I missed that.
He's also going to be a villain.
Yeah.
So, actually, Atom Smasher, I see a crossover there.
Okay, it's going to be WWE's The Edge. Or just Edge.
Yeah, okay. Now, I did remember seeing him, the news that he got cast somewhere, but I didn't catch that that's who he was going to play. Oh, that would be
interesting. Atom Smasher on The Flash.
Well, you know why they're doing that, is so they could set up the whole thing with Stephen Amell in the ring, and they could do a crossover with WWE SmackDown.
No, that's actually happening.
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, they'll tag team, and now he can, you know, yeah. the Edge can be in as Atom Smasher.
Yeah, I think he's doing SummerSlam this year. Amell is.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, that'll be fun.
Yeah,
that'll be fun to watch.
He was talking about it on one of his blogs that he's like going to be on there doing some kind of promotion for Arrow.
Next on Sci-Fi.
I was going to say, are we sure we're not crossing over with the Sci-Fi Channel?
Then
back onto Flash. Of course, there's Neil McDonough as Damian Dark.
Yeah, Dum Dum Duggan crossing over into another universe and being a villain. That'll be interesting.
That guy can shift around.
That is going to be fun to see him playing a bad guy. Because how often does he play a bad guy?
He's done it before. I think early on in his career, he did a lot of. Not necessarily bad guys, but people who were unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded of the character that he played in Ravenous, which was a soldier who was just, you know, just not a pleasant person to be around. I'm very pleased to have that. He's another one who's going to be fun to watch because he's another good personality and just somebody who, you know, can be on camera and be just fun to watch.
Could get a little bit convoluted. Not that Arrow hasn't already struggled with that, but with the idea that he could be tied to the League of Assassins and Ra's al Ghul and the rejuvenating well, you know, the Lazarus Pit and... Maybe Felicity's father. I mean, there's a whole lot of interesting details being discussed about what his character will do.
I hadn't heard that bit about him maybe being Felicity's father. I know that they're probably going to set him up as the leader of Hive. Mm-hmm. I know that's going to be the big, I don't want to say organization, but instead of League of Assassins, we're going to get more of the Hive, which they've hinted at before, and we've gotten a couple of teases in different episodes, so it's nice to see that finally play out a little bit.
But the Hive is more of a Titans team to fight.
Well, so was Deathstroke.
Organization.
Deathstroke really came into his own as a Titans villain, and you know that whole storyline with Terra and Brother Blood and all of that stuff. That was all
daughter
Titans
and all that,
which has me wondering if TNT plays their cards right. TNT and Warner Brothers Television, of course, producing Titans. If
Could
we're
they
going
get
to get, Bennett? Yeah, I mean, why not? Why couldn't they cross that over? And because we've already had some mention of Bludhaven on Arrow, there's nothing that says they can't do it unless DC comes in and says they can't do it. But DC seems to be trusting everyone to play with these characters. They keep giving them more characters, although we're probably not going to get Green Lantern yet. But they seem to be saying, okay, you can have this set of action figures, now go play. And now here you can have this set of action figures, go play. But no, you can't have Superman yet.
I'm just hoping that they, with the, you know, the last season of Arrow, to me it got a lot, you know, the structure of it with Amell's character, you know, Arrow constantly betraying everybody, and one day he's a hero, one day he's a villain. It just went back and forth so much that it started to get very too formulaic for me. You know, they weren't being very original with their storytelling. So I hope with this shift towards what they're saying is a lighter tone, and him, you know, going off to this, you know, coast city and all that process, that, you know, that they start to strengthen their storyline and dig a little deeper into the overall lore of the world. You know, they've done tons of character work, but they need to, I think, start expanding a little more and start building a stronger plot thread all the way through to later seasons. Things that we want to see resolved that aren't resolved right away.
Well, and I think some of the benefit that we're going to get from the lighter tone is going to be an easier crossover process with the other shows. Because if you look at you look at The Flash, not only The Flash, but also Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl, compared to Arrow, the tone is much, much lighter on all three of those shows. I mean, Arrow has been grimdark, darkness, no parents. You know, that, I mean, that's been Arrow's definition.
Yeah, he really does have no parents now after they killed his mom off.
Spoilers. Hopefully
everybody is caught up to this point.
But season three, you know, like Chris said, it was very uneven. It was all over the place. No, you had no idea what was going on with anybody. Nobody was really solidifying into any kind of a plot, other than you did this, and how dare you? And Felicity, oh poor Felicity, all she's doing is just sitting over in the corner in a puddle crying. Yeah. I mean, if that wasn't refrigerating a character, I don't know what it was. I mean, just reduce her to nothing.
And then Ray's too busy being Iron Man to solve anything.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens after that explosion that took out the entire floor of the building where he was.
And I have a question about, like, the, you know, the whole name change. I knew it was coming, and I, you know, eventually he had to do this, but then there's this talk sort of like off the show by Amell saying, you know, the Arrow's dead, I'm done with this persona, you know, I'm moving forward. And then he shows up at, you know, Comic-Con and runs out on the stage with this very powerful speech about, you know, his renewed commitment to the city and the process, and now he's Green Arrow.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's great. There's a costume update. But when we left off, the, you know, captain, you know, of the, I'm forgetting his name right now, but the captain of the show, you know, was hell-bent on taking Arrow down. You know, that he was like the enemy of the city, and I don't really recall that truly being resolved. And so
it hasn't been.
How can he come back, you know, to the city even a couple months later and be like, oh, hey, you know, that Arrow guy is not me. You know, like, I'm the Green Arrow guy. It's like the Superman in the glasses thing. You know, it's like, who's going to be fooled? And he's still going to be enemy number one.
That's been a recurring theme since season one.
Well, I mean,
Detective Lance after the Arrow.
Yeah, Lance has suspected Ollie of being the Arrow from the very beginning, so that's not anything new. I think for me the biggest challenge that the writers need to get around is how you recover from, one, revealing that Oliver Queen is the Arrow, two, oh no, wait, he's not. His sidekick was actually both the Arrow and the sidekick. And oh wait, no, now he's dead. But really he's not. He's pretending to be dead so he could go take this the name Jason and go hide and start a new life and stuff. And it really doesn't leave any room for Oliver Queen to come back to the city in any way, shape, or form. Green Arrow, maybe, or otherwise.
Maybe he'll move to Star City.
Well, see, there's that other thing. Well, did you guys see the theory that we may get the Red Hood on Arrow?
Another Batman villain?
And it could be Thea. See, here's the theory. This is a fan theory that spun out of the fact that she showed up in the Red Hood getup. And at some point she said she's working toward getting the yellow cape, so she's more of the Mia Dearden version of Speedy. But somebody said it's no accident that Roy Harper was pretending to be a guy named Jason. That Roy Harper assumes the identity of Jason Todd, becomes the Red Hood, and whatever happens to him, then Thea becomes the second Red Hood and takes his place. Instead of being Speedy or Red Arrow for any long period of time, eventually she migrates over into being a Red Hood. I don't think that's going to happen, but it was an interesting theory.
They already teased. I mean, they had the whole episode with the whole Red Hood, you know, kind of mythos and the character, and they kind of technically killed it off, but then showed that it could continue to be anybody. But
that was Gotham
theory.
Yeah, that was Gotham that did that, though. That wasn't Arrow.
Right.
Oh, was it really? Mm. Oh, crap. Well, I mixed up my shows.
That's okay. It's a multiverse. It's easy to do.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Yeah, we can mix that up. But I think it is going to be
interesting. Just crappy writing.
Yeah, I just don't know that the Arrow team would go there, because they spent pretty much the entire season going, Speedy, Speedy, her name is Speedy. We call her Speedy now. You remember her nickname is Speedy? Hey, you remember my sister, Speedy? I mean, the entire season we got that. And by the third episode, I was like, okay, yeah, I get it. Her name's Speedy. I know what's going to happen now. She's going to become Speedy. And she's going to get her own...
Wait, Speedy on this show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Wait, there's a character named Speedy? What?
No, there's no character named Speedy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, they telegraphed it from the very beginning and told us what was going to happen with her. But, yeah, it is going to be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't think she's going to become a villain. Even though she did come out of the Lazarus pit a little crazy. I don't know. I just don't see that happening with her.
They have indicated they're going to try to explore the ramifications of the, you know, resurrection this season, too.
Yeah, and they're going to do a little bit of that, too, with White Canary over on Legends of Tomorrow, because she's also been resurrected through the Lazarus pit.
And how is that going to work in crossovers when we've had this really deep emotional storyline that involves Sarah Lance's death and her, you know, the hiding all this process and Lance getting all pissed off at Arrow and everybody else and Laurel and wanting to kill and beat up everybody because of this. And, you know, she's dead, but she's not dead. Now she's dead, but she's not dead. And now she's not dead again. It's like, how, you know, what's he going to say when White Canary shows up?
Well, her dad's going to go back to drinking, and her sister's going to go back to drugs and drinking, and then we will get depressing Arrow like we had.
Well, people are already starting to wonder when we're going to see Black Canary and White Canary fight. They must fight.
Exactly.
There's got to be that inevitable. Well, you know, given that Legends of Tomorrow is going to play with time travel, alternate timelines, alternate universes. I mean, there's plenty of wiggle room for them to play with all of that. I mean, one episode she could be the villain who's working for Vandal Savage. The next episode she could be the hero who's working against Vandal Savage. It's just in a different timeline. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities that open up with that show. And
maybe
the fact that it's going to be...
Work.
Yeah, well, you gotta make it work.
Maybe White Canary could go back in time to stop her as Black Canary from dying.
It could sure is that. Anything could happen. Anything could happen. And, well, and given that we're not going to get that until mid-season, you know, you've got plenty of time in the Flash and Arrow proper to set up that whatever they're going to do with her in Legends of Tomorrow. Because you still got to spin off Rey. You got to spin off Stein. So there's going to be, you know, you've got to set up for those things to happen before that show launches. So they've got time to play it out and set it up proper. And I give them my trust for now. We'll see.
Have they revealed casting for Vandal yet?
I don't know that they have. Tim, have you seen anything?
I haven't. And I think that's going to be a fairly big deal because
Michael Ironside.
My vote is still Sean Bean.
That would be fun. I that would be fun to have Sean Bean do it. And somebody cuts off his head, and he stands up and says, "Really?"
And he doesn't die.
I just get Clancy Brown. That'll work too.
it actually would.
I know.
Who else could you get? Oh, you know who could play? You know who they could get is Bruce Campbell.
Oh, there you go.
Bruce Campbell would be a good Vandal Savage. Or Peter Weller is a possibility.
See, Peter Weller could work quite well because he when he goes cold, he goes cold.
Mm-hmm.
And that could actually be you could believe him as being somebody who is, you know, I'm gonna, you know, kill most of the world so that I can have what I want. So. Yeah.
I think at one point we had talked about this one time. Somebody suggested Christopher Lambert. It may have been me. Suggested
it was you.
Christopher Lambert or Adrian Paul, because there can be only one. And that has to be a line. If one of those guys ends up playing Vandal Savage, that has to be a line in there somewhere. Somebody's got to say it.
I think you could potentially get that because, quite frankly, you know, these guys are fans. You can tell these guys are fans.
Yeah.
So you know they're at least one of them is a fan of Highlander.
Has to be
the original and only Highlander film, as far as I'm aware.
Yes, there can be only one.
That's right.
What about I just had a flash of somebody and then it went out of my head. I need more coffee.
Sean Connery
would be good. No, Nicolas Cage.
Oh, there you go.
Allie just made a face. Gosh. Allie just made a face. Allie made a face.
Well, you know, every other month it seems like I hear Nicolas Cage is having money problems. So
it's hard to say why. He starred in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be why.
Vin Diesel as Vandal Savage.
He doesn't spend caveman to me.
Nowadays, though, with digital characters, you could get somebody. You could get a dead actor to play Vandal Savage.
We could have Andy Serkis. We could have Andy Serkis mocap as Vandal Savage.
There you go.
Well, if we're gonna go with dead actors, then give me David Niven.
Ooh.
Super refined, just evil as all. You know.
Christopher Lee as Vandal Savage.
Christopher Lee would be a good one too.
Too soon.
Yeah, probably too.
Marlon Brando.
Young Marlon Maybe. Brando. Young Marlon Brando, sure. We could have too much fun with this. We could speculate for a while, but.
Basil Rathbone. Then I mean, come on. we're just gonna be ridiculous.
Sure. You could do a young. Well, no, because Scott Eastwood is playing somebody over on Suicide Squad. So I was just gonna say you could do a digitally young Clint Eastwood as Vandal Savage, but that would be too close. I don't know. It will be interesting to see who they get to play that, as well as the rumors of Lucy Lane coming in on Supergirl. And we'll have to talk about that at some point because we don't have confirmation that that's happening yet, nor do we have any kind of an idea of who even would be playing that character, if she'd be the Superwoman Lucy Lane character or the stewardess flight attendant Lucy Lane, or the air traffic controller Lucy Lane, or the blind air traffic controller Lucy Lane. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities there. We'll have to get into when we get more information on that. And I think we've come to the end of our time here. Our hour is up. Our session is over. How do you feel about that? 30 minutes. It's been 30 minutes. See, Allie's perfectly fine with that because she has to sit and push buttons and listen to me yammer on this. All right. So if you've got theories, you've got ideas, you've got opinions on The Flash, on Arrow, on Gotham, on Legends of Tomorrow, any of the shows that DC is doing on television, or if you've got ideas for stuff that's going on in the movies, you can certainly let us know. You can leave a comment or you can send us an email, roguesgallery@scififorme.com. You can find us on the social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Pinterest, Google+, YouTube, and Tumblr. And that's going to do it for us this session. Next episode, we'll be talking about DC Comics film media again, because that's what the show's about. So I want to thank everybody that was part of this discussion. Jeff Hackworth.
You're welcome.
Christopher Jensen.
Thank you.
Timothy Harvey.
Always a pleasure.
Allie, the intern over here, pushing the buttons in engineering very well. And for all of us here at Sci-Fi for Me, my name is Jason Hunt. Thanks very much for listening. We will be back with another episode very soon.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.